Today's lecture is devoted to basic period structure or period form. Periods are associated most commonly with tonal music. A period consists of two phrases which are placed together in a kind of a question and answer setting. At least that would be one way to look at them. The first of the phrases is generally not a complete phrase. It has a tendency, that is, it has a full close of some sort, but it's not conclusive. It needs to be answered by the phrase that follows. One way to think of this is to liken it to an English sentence, which is a conditional phrase. For example, if I said something like, "If it weren't raining today, I would go out shopping." That's a good example of the first phrase sets up a condition and the second phrase completes it. A phrase in music is a little bit like that. A period, I'm sorry, in music is just a little bit like that. Now, there are two halves to the period, two phrases. And the first of those is called the antecedent. Antecedent, literally meaning that which comes before. It's followed by a phrase called the consequent, which makes perfect sense. That's which leads out of the antecedent. Generally speaking, the antecedent will end either on a half cadence or some kind of a weak or inconclusive cadence, and the consequent will end on a complete cadence of some sort. Although there is no law that says the two halves of the period have to be at the same length, as a matter of fact, both of them can be expanded. For the course of this lecture, we're just going to talk about periods composed exclusively of two four-measure phrases, or the equivalent of the four measures. So let's begin just by listening to a period. And I've taken this period out of a Beethoven sonata. The first thing that we hear in this piece, the first half of the period, again, is called the antecedent. And I'd like to begin just by listening to that part of it alone. Right there, that's a half cadence. The period itself begins in the key of A flat major, and so we move to the half cadence. One more time on that. So you can hear it's a half cadence. We're not going to end the music right there. It sounds rather, you know, rather problematic, so we need to finish it off. So here we go. Half cadence. Now. So we finish it off all together. And so you can hear that that's a complete idea that first went to a half cadence and then to the whole cadence. So usually, again, the antecedent will usually begin by going to a half cadence. Here's another example from a very famous piece of music indeed. Listen to this from the Brahms First Symphony. See, and there we stop. We stop on the half cadence, which then needs to be finished up. So let's hear it all the way through. We begin and then move to the half cadence there. Now it's almost like starting over. And we finish it. And we finish. So this again is this very typical way that these periods work. It's not the only way, but typically the two phrases are beginning with the same material. That's called a parallel period when that happens. A little more on that later. The first of them goes to this half cadence and the second to a perfect authentic cadence. However, the cadence at the end of the antecedent doesn't have to be a half cadence. It can be any kind of a cadence which just isn't quite complete enough. Here's an example from a Mozart sonata. Thank you. What makes that not quite complete enough is that it ends on a weak beat. So the end of the phrase, it's what they used to in the bad old days call a feminine ending. It's a terrible name. Nowadays, a better word for it is a weak ending. That is that the tonic is on the second beat of the measure. And because of that, we're not necessarily hearing it as being a very strong resolution. So you can see that it's not really finished. So in order to finish it off, we have to hear the whole thing all the way through. Here it is. Then it goes on, and this time goes to a stronger ending. It actually ends on the first beat of the measure. Mozart slurs things to keep things a little bit ambiguous, but still, the ending of the consequent is on the first beat of the measure. Hear it one more time. So this kind of affair where, again, you have some kind of a weak ending at the beginning of the antecedent and then a stronger ending at the consequent. Now, theorists have had to deal with a number of other kinds of periodic structures, and in some cases, some of the nomenclature they've used may be a little bit questionable. But I'm going to use the nomenclature that's normal. That is the nomenclature that most people use. One of those has to do with the period in which the antecedent itself is a completely closed-off phrase. There's absolutely nothing odd about it at all. But then what happens is that the consequent goes on to modulate to another key. As a result, we can say in a way that the two phrases are dependent on each other because the second phrase depends on the first phrase to set up its modulation. So in a way, it is still very much periodic. But in point of fact, though, what really makes it periodic is the fact that it's parallel. The two phrases begin the same way. The first phrase ends completely. It comes to a full cadence. And then the second phrase actually goes on to modulate. Here's an example by Robert Schumann. Full cadence. Then it goes on. And it goes to a 5 of 5 and actually at least tonicizes 5 ever so briefly. It's not a very strong period any way you look at it. The cadences are weak, but still is an example of the consequent modulating and the antecedent being actually pretty much complete in and of itself. Here we go again to a perfect authentic cadence. Then going on, modulating like that. So sometimes a period may not be quite as cut and dried as the first couple of examples I gave you. As you well know, in music, a lot of stuff isn't as cut and dried as we would like it always to be. It's also possible, in some unusual cases, for a period to actually end on a half cadence. That almost sounds as though it's a contradiction in the way periods work. But there is one instance in which periods typically do end on half cadences. And that is if the period is the second part of something that is going to finish off with the third part. So in three-part forms, ABA forms, the B section sometimes may be a period. Other times it may not. But periods do occur as the second section of three-part sections. That is, they're sort of acting like transitions. And in that particular case, the period will actually be incomplete. Listen to this little period. It's from a Tchaikovsky piano piece. It's in G minor. And it goes to a half cadence here. That's antecedent. Now, consequent. This is a cadential 6-4. It moves direct, it just ends on a half cadence. And what we had was a clear period there, but only going to the half cadence. Here it is again. then going to a half cadence. All right, now taken all by itself, it sounds a little bit odd, I think. Let's hear the whole piece that it's part of. The structure of the entire piece is what is known as a three-part song form, which we'll be covering in later lectures. But this, again, this period is part two of the song form. So here is the whole thing. Starting out with a phrase. Alright. Now, this is our second part here. This is the consequent. Going to a half cadence here. Then, back to the original phrase. Alright, so that's it's a little unusual, perhaps. The period is the second part of something, but it is an example of a period ending on a half cadence. It can happen. It's not all that common, but it can happen. Now, another thing that can happen in a period that you should be aware of is that the consequent can modulate. Now, we already looked at that in an earlier example, but in this case, we have a very clear kind of period in which the antecedent moves to a half cadence, the consequent comes back in on the tonic, and then the consequent modulates. This is actually very common, and it's known as a modulating period. Here's an example out of Mendelssohn. In this period, I think you can probably hear that the two halves are pretty strongly delineated from each other. The piece is in D minor. And the second half of it modulates into A major. Let's hear it one more time, shall we? Now this is D minor. We're moving to a half cadence here, 5. Now we start again in D minor. Now we begin to modulate. That's through minor 7, which takes us to 5 of F major. And we're in F major at that point. So in other words, we have modulated from D minor to F major, which would be very common. So up to this point, I've just been talking to you about the way periods work, the two halves work together. But now we need to talk about the two fundamental kinds of periods, and those are parallel periods and contrasting periods. In a parallel period, the antecedent and the consequent begin with approximately the same material. It doesn't have to be identical by any means, but both of them have to have a sense of being about the same. That's really what the word parallel means in this case, that is, that they're very similar. Now, to demonstrate this, we're going to take a piece of music, Schubert's Wegenlied, and put it together in a group of different kinds of parallel periods. Theorists have distinguished a number of ways in which two phrases can be parallel. And the first of those ways is called by identity. Let's start out by listening just to the antecedent alone of the Schubert Wegenlied. Here it is. Moving to a half cadence. So that's the antecedent. Now, let's put onto that what is called a consequent by identity. In a consequent by identity, the consequent really begins more or less as a carbon copy of the antecedent. So here's the Wegenlied this way. By the way, this is the way Schubert really wrote it. So this is our antecedent. Now the consequent begins the same way. First two bars are identical. Now changes. Alright. So in this particular case, the two phrases, consequent, antecedent and consequent, begin more or less identical to each other. There can be little changes. You don't have to get really pedantic about this. But the fact is if they sound pretty much alike, they are by identity. This is not the only way to do it. Another way to create a parallel period is what we call by transposition. What this means is that the consequent is on different scale steps than the antecedent. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily in a different key. So the word by transposition is, for example, perhaps a little bit inaccurate. But what it does mean is that there has been some change of scale steps, at least. Here's this Schubert with an added-on consequent that I added on to it. It's not Schubert's original. That gives you a consequent by transposition. So we began with the same antecedent as always. Now at this point, though, I'm going to place in a different consequent, still the same melodic line, and then it, in this case, I moved it to a half cadence, by the way, just to show you can do that as well. But that is called a consequent by transposition. That is more or less the same melodic line, at least at the beginning, but on different scale steps. Now, another way the consequent can be created in a parallel period is by embellishment. What that means is that the consequent repeats the antecedent again, but this time it embellishes, adds a lot of ornaments. Here's an example of that. Same old antecedent again. Now we come in to the consequent, which is embellished. That is a consequent by embellishment. The fourth way of creating a parallel period is to create the consequent by contour similarity. This is getting right on the edge of what meaning of what parallel is all about. What it is that the consequent will follow the overall shape of the antecedent, but it may be pretty distant from it. The ear will pick up the parallelism anyway. It'll still sound connected, but the two of them are really going to be pretty different. So here's our Schubert with that. Once again, same old antecedent. Now, consequent. Still goes up and back down. But it's very, in many ways, very different. The parallelism in that case has become rather subtle. When doing an analysis, you have to be very careful to watch out for that one, because the parallel period by contour similarity could be mistakenly analyzed as a contrasting period. So you have to use your ear and listen very carefully. So speaking of the contrasting period is any kind of period that is not parallel. What that means is that the antecedent and the consequent are still related to each other, probably more through harmonic means, more than anything else, but they are not parallel. That is, they don't start with the same material. And one of the most common ways in which you'll discover that is that the melodic line very often will have a very different direction. So, for example, if the antecedent tends to move upwards, then the consequent will tend to move downwards. Now, one very important thing to realize is that they may actually be rhythmically very similar, the antecedent and the consequent. They may actually have a lot of very similar rhythms. Rhythm alone is not enough to create a parallel period, at least not according to standard music theory. Here's an example by Kuhlau, which gives you an example of a contrasting period. It's similar rhythms, but very different directions. Now notice that this is a descending line. It goes on its way down. So, consequent moves upward. Goes up. Alright, so in other words, in this case, the antecedent went down, and then the consequent goes up. Let's hear it again, shall we? On our way down. Da dee da da da. Down. Now, from low to high. And that is enough. According to, again, standard, the sort of the agreed upon terminology, insofar as it goes, that's enough to qualify as a contrasting period. The two phrases don't have to be violently different from each other, in other words. And in fact, they rarely are. Because if the phrases are really just completely, totally different from each other, then even with the harmony supporting a periodic structure, ear probably isn't going to pick up the periodicity. So as a rule, there's going to be some similarity. Here's a good example of a contrasting period in which the rhythm is even closer. Okay, even closer. This is by Johann Jakob de Neufville. Not exactly a household name. Then the consequent. So melodically, they're totally different. The rhythm kind of actually helps hold them together. Typically, contrasting periods will share a lot of rhythmic similarities with each other. That doesn't mean that they're parallel. Once in a while, I've seen someone analyze something like they call it parallel by rhythm or something like that. But in point of fact, contrasting periods need something to hold them together. And rhythm is one of those things that can do that. So many contrasting periods will have rhythmic similarities and their overall directions will be different. Now, finally, like all sorts of things, if I'm setting up a duality here, that is a duality between parallel periods and contrasting periods, obviously there are going to be periods that slip through the cracks. There are things that are obviously periods, but at the same time, what exactly are they? Are they parallel? Are they contrasting? Here's an example of such a period that could be analyzed either which way. Half cadence. So, consequent. The big question is this a contrasting period or is it a parallel period, either by transposition and or contour similarity? If you want to view it as contrasting, you can do that because of those little ornamental tones. Ya, da, dee, da, da, which would seem to imply a downward motion followed by an upward motion. The consequent itself goes la, dee, da, da, straight upwards. However, to my mind, that's a rather naive way of analyzing this. My own feel about it is that this is, in fact, a parallel period. By contour similarity, and perhaps even more exactly, it's really a parallel period by transposition. Let's hear it again. See what you think. Da-dee-da. I hear that as an upward moving. Then, in the consequent, da-bum-bum. But also upward moving, triadic. So I would analyze this particular period as parallel myself. I think it is, and not contrasting. But one can understand there might be some room for disagreement. So let's reiterate this then. Let's take a look back for a moment and remind ourselves everything we've learned in this particular lesson. It's a lot of information. Again, a period is a phrase structure. That is, it's literally a song form, a one-part song form, made up out of two phrases, of which the first phrase is called the antecedent, the second phrase, the consequent. In most cases, the antecedent will be identified by ending inconclusively, either on a half cadence or something which can take the place of a half cadence, whereas the consequent will move to some kind of a very strong cadence, usually an authentic cadence. In some occasional situations, the antecedent may actually move to a full cadence, to an authentic cadence, and the consequent will modulate onward to another key. That can and does happen sometimes. Also, occasionally, a period itself can end on a half cadence. The period could end on a half cadence if it is part of a larger structure in which that half cadence will be properly resolved. There are also periods which modulate. That is, they act like any other period with an antecedent ending on a half cadence, and then the consequent itself modulating. Periods fall into two categories, that is, parallel and contrasting. Parallel periods, which are periods in which the antecedent and consequent begin with similar material. There are four kinds of parallel periods. That is, parallel by identity, parallel by transposition, parallel by embellishment, and parallel by contour similarity. And that is contrasted, as it were, by the contrasting period in which the two parts are not parallel, but they may, and almost certainly will, contain some similarities to hold them together, particularly in the nature of rhythm. So that's where we're going to stop with our lecture on basic periods, and then the next lectures will be devoted to learning how periods are expanded and used in larger structures.